ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. I am Lisa. I am your host this evening, and I am joined by Tandy and Christina. Hello, ladies.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
And before we dive into this week's topic, which is one we're very excited about, it's a very broad one though. So we're going to warn you that we're just going to be sort of going very broad but shallow with this one. But before we dive in, I want to remind you guys that we are at beerladiespodcast.com. We are Beer Ladies Pod pretty much everywhere. You can find our link tree just by searching for us. You can go to that link tree or to our website and find ways to support the pod. If you want to buy some merch, if you want to buy us a pint, all of the things are there, all of our back episodes. And of course, you can find us on all of your favorite podcatchers or on YouTube. And we love it if you leave a like, get a rating, subscription, all of those things really help. So thank you for doing those things. So all of the administrivia out of the way, we're going to go ahead and dive right in, because this week we are talking about Belgian beers. What are they? And again, we know this is a big category, so we're definitely not going to get into the minutiae of every Belgian style and sub-style and sort of arguments over who makes them, but we are going to give you kind of an overview of these different styles, talk very, very, very briefly about some history, but also have some of those arguments over things we like, things we don't like. Is glassware important? Because I know this is going to be a big one for some of you out there who like to worry about things, but before we get into that, we're going to do our usual what you drinking, or I think for a couple of snipe, what did you have laying around that was Belgian? But I think we'll start with Tandy, because I think you're properly on the sauce tonight. So what have you got?
I am properly on the sauce, and my glass just nearly overflowed. Okay, so I'm committing my own cardinal sin. I'm drinking a different beer from its glassware, and we'll talk about that, but I'm a bit of a stickler. I don't really like to drink branded. I don't like to drink out of branded glassware unless it's that brand. But either way, I'm giving a nod there to Chimay with this lovely glass, even though it seems dirty. But anyway, but I'm drinking Duvel. So Old classic Duvel, the Belgian strong blonde. And cheapers, it's been a while since I've had one of these, but always a lovely one, this beer. And interestingly, I've got this book called, hold on, I'm going to get it. Very disorganized. 1001 Beers to Try Before You Die. And Duvel is in here as well, because it's obviously a very well-known Belgian beer. And it is, this book is very heavy. Look at this thing.
Oh my goodness. Wow. For those at home, this is like, you know, a big breeze block of a book here. So
it's a massive one. But it's, they'll say in the tasting notes here, golden straw colored with notes of candied fruits and yeast in the nose. Light bodied, but with a backbone to balance the hops and alcohol. Taste is dry with a warming, semi-bitter aftertaste. And I'm sure we'll get to all of those kind of descriptors, especially yeast and warming and spicy and, you know, kind of the things that make Belgian beers taste Belgian-y.
Exactly. Yes. What is Belgian-y? We will get to that. So that looks exciting. Christina, friend, what do you have that has been kicking around your cellar?
Well, I had like a three different Belgian beers before Christmas and I didn't drink all of them. So I have one still left. So welcome back to that beer again. So this is the Boone Creek Mariage Parfait or Marriage Parfait. I am sorry, my French is abominable. But yeah, so a completely sort of different style than the Belgian beer that Tandy had, but still very quintessentially Belgian. And we can talk about, you know, sort of the difference between sort of these kinds of sours and lambics and whatever and the other sort of styles. But I love these sorts of beers. I'm really here for like the farmhousey notes and the fruit and the sour and all my favorite things. So yeah, that's what I have. And I also have a really cool glass that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yes, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. Excellent. And I'm you know, boring and on some meds this week, so I can't drink either. But I did have a look around and I said, oh, I've got some delicious things that are waiting for me when I'm feeling better. I'm on the mend, so it's good. But I have the Troubadour Imperial Stout. This is from, now they call it the Musketeers Brewery. Back in the day, they just kept it all in French. And so for people like me who took French, but who have abominable French and terrible pronunciation, this makes life a little bit easier. But you know, but they are, yeah, now themusketeers.be is their website these days. This is an Imperial Stout, but definitely I would say for anyone who's not had this before, it still is, and we're going to air quote here because I think we may do a lot of air quoting in this episode, Belgian-y. Like it's certainly not like an Imperial Stout you would get here. I would say there are some similarities to some American Imperial Stouts, but I think that's for reasons that we can maybe talk about a little bit. But I think with that said, maybe we should just dive in, and I'm gonna throw over to you, Tandy, to say there are a lot of different kinds of Belgian beer. How can people start to just, you know, get a handle on what these different things are? And as we'll talk about how some of these things are very similar yet different. So
indeed. So I'll give you an overview of the different styles that I've noted down, and with the very big disclaimer that I probably don't even have all of them. You know, I've got probably most of the ones that we'd find here in Ireland or around the world fairly easily, but there's probably a bunch of local styles that I haven't included. And before I do that, I'm going to give you a couple of just quick little facts about Belgian beer, because it is kind of fun and interesting. And I'm completely basing this off of a work beer club that I did a while ago. So I'm paraphrasing and stealing from myself. So, righto. Yeah, absolutely. So brewing started in Belgium in the 3rd and 4th century. That's the sort of earliest known writings of beer that we know of. Please don't hate me, historians, if I get it wrong, but that's what I found. But hops were then only introduced in the 14th century. So as with the rest of the world, to bitter your beer, you'd use a gruit, which was a mixture of herbs and plants and different things that had bittering profiles. And hops were introduced in the 14th century then. And then in the 19th century, Trappist beers started to emerge and become more prominent. And Trappist beers, as opposed to Abbey beers, are beers that are brewed in abbeys, but by monks. So this is, you know, got a real religious connotation to it. But Trappist beers are different from Abbey beers because the sole focus of that abbey that makes a Trappist beer is to make money to provide for the monastery and the community around it, as opposed to profit. So an abbey beer can be made in an abbey, it can be brewed by monks, but if it's done for profit, it's not a Trappist beer. And there are a good few Trappist beers that are not just Belgian. So it's not a Belgian only invention. And there are 10 certified Trappist breweries in the world. It's changed over time.
We just lose one a week or two ago?
US. Yeah. Well, maybe another one, but a few months ago in the US, we lost one. But there are some, there's the most of them are in Belgium. We've got two in the Netherlands, and then Austria, Italy, UK, and USA, Yeah, it's England. Yeah. USA unfortunately closed down a while back, but Trappist beers are one of those things that people associate with Belgium, even though it's not just Belgium. But thought I'd mention that one. Then 19th and 20th century saw, as across the world, mass industrialization, which reduced the number of breweries from, get this, 3,223 breweries in the tiny country of Belgium to only 106 in 1993.
Wow,
it's a big drop. It's come back. Now, largely, there's been a good big sort of upswing, but 400 breweries odd around Belgium today. And I'm not entirely sure whether that includes all the different micro and craft breweries, but these are the ones that are listed at the very least. And then getting to this kind of Belgian-y essence, you know, there is Belgian beer is protected by UNESCO as an intangible cultural heritage of humanity, which I just think is very special, because there is something different about Belgian beers, right? You can almost smell it and taste it before you, you know, and then you know it's Belgian. And so let's go through a couple of different styles. Now, you can, the BJCP classifies them probably in a neat and tidy way, but sometimes it can also be a little confusing. So though, for instance, in BJCP, there is a difference between Belgian ales, Belgian strong ales, Belgian like Trappist beers, because they're obviously, they've got this protected almost status that you have to be certified as a Trappist brewery to produce Trappist beers. But I'll go through some of the ones that we're talking about here. So Trappist and Abbey beers are not necessarily styles on their own. Right. But what you'd find often in Trappist and Abbey beers are things like a single or a blonde. They're not always the same thing, but you'll find the lowest alcohol form of beer, sometimes a single, sometimes a blonde, sometimes a golden ale. Then you'll find a double, a triple, and a quad. Those are the sort of standard, and they're tiering up. They tier up based on their ABVs and their flavors. Their flavors are quite different. So, for instance, a double is like a brown beer. It's like an amber beer, and it's got sort of almost typical Belgian yeast spiciness and, you know, interesting kind of dried fruity flavors, quite a light alcohol. It finishes quite dry, but it's got this red copper sort of brown color. Then you get, let's say, a triple. And a triple, because it's now a higher alcohol, I think people get these confused a lot, because the double being dark, I think people sometimes
associate it. I think people still think, oh, it's darker. Mm-hmm. This will be the stronger one. When in fact, that triple will mess you up if you're paying attention.
Yeah. Exactly. That triple will mess you up. Triples often come in at around 9%. Then again, doubles are normally between 6 and 8.
So yeah, there's a range not, there.
Yeah, there's a range, and they're not playing around either.
Yeah.
But a triple is a very interesting beer because it's really strong, but it's very pale. It's got a lot of sort of spiciness to it, but it's got good bitterness. You know, the triple is the one that you've got a bit more of a hop presence than the other ones, I would say. And again, a dry finish. All of these beers, by the way, or at least a lot of the ones that I'm talking about so far, are often very highly carbonated. Have you noticed? I mean, they almost want to jump out of the bottle for you. And they're often re-fermented or bottle conditioned in the bottle. So they're naturally carbonated, which is quite cool. Okay, so double, triple, we're going to move on to the quad. The quad is also called, I mean, certainly in the BJCP, it's called let me just get my naming right, the Belgian Dark Strong Ale. And quads are, they can also be very, very strong. You know, initially when I started getting into Belgian beers, I always thought, okay, single, double, triple, quad, it meant like, you know, 4%, 6%, 8-9% and then 10 plus. Doesn't always mean that,
right.
but a quad is literally between, again, 8-12% alcohol. It's not often as dark as the double, which can also be very confusing, but it is a dark, strong ale. So it's like a triple but darker, but it's complex, very strong, rich maltiness. This one's got more of a malt character than what the others do, but still dark, fruity flavors, spicy notes. Not as hoppy as a triple, more alcoholic than a double. That's the sort of placement that I think makes sense there. So those are, you'll often find those within the Trappist and the Abbey styles, but then there's a whole bunch of other Belgian beers that we haven't spoken about. So the Belgian Blonde is the probably quintessential Belgian beer that I think a lot of people know, and that you're talking about Leffey, and you're talking about Le Chouf, and there's a bunch of blondes. Blondes may have come about as an answer to Pilsners. Some people think, I'm not sure if that's really true, because they don't seem to compete with them. They don't have the same flavor profile. They're not as, you know, light and easy to drink. They're not as dry. No, they often are, like, as with the other ones that I've mentioned, they're often kind of fruity, sweet, spicy, peppery, and often dry finish and very highly carbonated. What makes all of these beers, I mean, these ones in particular, we'll get to the sort of sour and farmhousey ones. What makes them really cool is that often in the brew house, the brewers are using candied sugar and other adjuncts in their mash and in the fermentation to effectively thin out the body and raise the alcohol without it being a sticky mess. You know, they're often quite light in body. They're very pleasantly light to drink, but they just hit you like a, you know, like a ton of bricks. Okay, so let's move on to a different sort of category kind of Belgian beers. Let's go to some sort of wheat-based ones. The most well-known is the Wit, which is effectively the Belgian equivalent of a Weissbier, except that the flavors are a bit different. So it's a wheat beer, but instead of having a sort of banana clove flavor that comes from the yeast, it's got sort of a coriander and orange peel. And yeast is important, but the spices are added too, in a lot of senses, in a lot of ways. Then we get saisons. Oh, love a saison.
Yes.
Love a saison. And saisons, you know, we've had this down on our list for an episode for a long time, and we'll eventually get to it there, guys. But saisons are less of a style and more of a guideline, you know.
They're a vibe.
But saisons are farmhouse ales. They were often very specific to the local farm, brewery, direction of the wind. You know, things changed quite a lot within saisons. But typically, they're brewed seasonally, often so that they're ready for the end of summer. And what we think we know is that they were often brewed for farm workers and laborers and people working out in the fields. So they couldn't be too heavy. Although nowadays you get saisons even at 8-9%. Saisons are a vibe, not a style. But what does make them interesting or different is the yeast. Common theme, we'll get to more of it. But again, spicy, fruity, peppery, complex, interesting. Some depth, but still being refreshing and easygoing.
Refreshing, Moorish, all of those things, yeah.
All of the things. Okay, so then let's talk a little bit about the soury type beers. So there's some interesting relationships between them, which is what's kind of fun. So a lambic beer is your most kind of basic bitch of Belgian sour beers.
Your OG of all of the
OG. Yeah, exactly. It's a young, sour, spontaneously fermented, mostly, you know, it's often a wheat beer. At least part of the grist will be, you know, predominantly wheat. So your lambics are your young sours. Your gers is your old sours.
Now, I think you just got closer to pronouncing it correctly than I would ever in a million years. So
I've been thinking about it all day, because, you know, my natural instinct is to say Gerza, but it's
not. I know.
Oh gosh, but anyway.
Different category. Yeah.
Yes, totally. So Gers is an old blended lambic. So what happens with a lambic is that the lambic is quite tart and sour. Then they get barrel aged often. Or they just get aged in whatever they want. Sometimes they're put onto fruit, which then makes a creak. So creaks are just lambic that have been on fruit. There we go.
Yes.
Like Christina's,
there we are. Christina's hat, right there. Yes.
And before this episode, I had a creek myself because they're delicious. Bergers is a very interesting beer because it takes some young lambic that's been made that's still quite tart, and it takes older lambics that have been aged, that have calmed down, taken on other flavors, and it's a blended beer. And apparently these came about a century after Dom Perignon discovered that blending different sparkling wines or blending different wines created a new kind of sparkling wine, effectively champagne, and it could re-ferment in the bottle, and it gave it all these interesting flavors. So Bergers is just a blended, more complex, older sour beer, but it's still a lambic base. Right. And if we talk about, by the way, an Eau de Gers, Eau de Gers is a mixture of 100% old lambic, whereas Gers that's not called Eau de is, it can be a newer lambic and an older lambic blended to create something. So there we go. That's some of the lambics. Let me see what's next. Right. Kind of on the back of it, Flemish Red and Haute Brune. So Flemish Red is a sour red. So imagine a red ale, but soured, because it's also spontaneously fermented, using literally whatever's in the air and whatever the brewers have cultivated and nurtured in their brew houses. And the Brune is a brown beer. So, you know, almost think of a brown ale, but it's got that sourness and it's got that complexity. I don't know how often those are blended, but maybe they are. Yeah. Now, those are the styles that I've got. Are there any more that I've completely missed out?
I think that's a big one. Now, Christina, any that you've thought of, though? Because I do have one in the back of my mind, but we'll get to that.
No, I think you kind of covered all the basics besides maybe more niche things, but yeah.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the only other thing to point out is just the obvious that there's also a lot of cheap lager made in Belgium that the whole rest of the world consumes. So Stella Artois, all of that kind of a thing. And when you go to Belgium, there's also plenty of local cheap lager that everyone drinks as well. Yeah. So just, you know, one of those things where it's just because you go to the place where they make all the lovely things doesn't mean people are enjoying all the lovely things all the time. Sometimes you need your, you know, whatever, your lawnmower beer or whatever. And that's fine. Not judging, just pointing out that this is here too. So
yeah. And then, you know, as with a lot of different countries that produce a lot of different beer, you will get IPAs and you will get stouts.
Absolutely.
And you will get all of these things. But the ones I wanted to mention are the ones that are sort of quintessentially Belgian, as opposed to, you know, adaptations over time. You know, even Duvel or Duvel have done, you know, Belgian style IPAs where they've used their sort of yeasts, but hopped it like an IPA. And those are really interesting. But they're not super, super traditional.
Speaking about quintessentially Belgium, Belgian beers, I'm going to show this glass to the audience. And if you think this looks a little bit like a beaker, maybe something you might find in a science lab. Anybody familiar with this kind of glass? If you're just listening, it's a wooden stand. With a glass that has sort of, you know, the regular kind of a pint glass top, but then it gets very, very narrow into sort of a rounded bottom, like almost looks like a beaker. So no prizes for guessing, but this is a quack glass.
Yes.
So who wants to explain what quack is?
Oh my gosh, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll tell you a story of how I got a quack glass as well.
Oh gosh.
And I think it's the same. It's kind of the same everywhere, but there is in Cape Town, there is a Belgian beer bar, which is really unusual and niche for, you know, anywhere. But you had to, if you wanted a quack, you had to hand in one of your shoes. Because their story, their shtick, and they were sticking to it, was that this glassware was so expensive that you wouldn't steal it if you knew you were walking out with one shoe. Now, I've heard that story now told around the world in a few places.
I've heard different versions of it. Yeah.
So, did you guys have to give up a shoe to get a quack
glass? No, I My husband bought this for me.
Fair enough. So now you can just buy them. You
know, like the Belgian carols. Like,
yeah, we bought this in Belgium, I should say. Yeah. Like we were at the source. Well, not the source, but you know.
Yeah. And I think I got one. I'm sure someone told me the shoe story when I got one. I no longer have one, but there are so many Belgian bars in and around Philly. Like those are, you know, obviously Monk's Tavern and places like that. And then all throughout that, it's just a thing that every so often there's going to be a promotion, like turn up, do X, and you'll get a quack glass or whatever else. So I turned up and did whatever the thing was. I think I turned up and might have been the only woman there, and they were just like, you should have the glass. But again, this is like 20 years ago, so I'm sure that would not be the same now, especially since the last Philly Beer Week I had there, which again, obviously this is years ago now, but it was like, let's meet all the amazing female brewmasters of Belgium who have come over for this week to show us their wonderful beers and do saison tastings and all of that kind of thing. So there was an evolution, folks, is what I'm saying, even just in that time, like 20 to 15 years ago, between like, oh, this is cool and normal. So just saying that. But yeah, the quack glass that was lost some many moves ago. So there you go.
I think it was probably just a brilliant marketing campaign that actually made you want the glass more than anything else.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think when I've had a quack again just on its own, and I don't know that I could point to that moment. So.
No.
I mean, genuinely, when we were in Belgium, we ordered it because the glass was just so unique. I was like, I need to try this beer because... what is this glass? I feel like I'm making a science experiment. Okay. And the beer's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. It's like an amber, sort of slightly dark amber Belgian ale. You know, it's almost, I don't know if it could be considered a double, but I almost want to say it's something
definitely
along those
malty.
Lines.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
More malty.
It leans to malty. But yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, like it was fun to drink. Like we talk about this so much about, you know, beer drinking is also so important about like the complete sensory experience. So like having a fun, unique glass and like having that would take a beer that was maybe only, and I'm not saying that the beer is only like this, but it would, when you have that full sensory experience, it makes it just that little bit more special. And it really improves, I think, the entire.
Here we all are. We're talking about a beer that none of us are drinking, but you know, and haven't had in a while, but we're still talking about it. So
absolutely. Yeah. In the same way that, you know, I was in the Palace Bar, and at least two different Americans came in and said, oh my God, it's so true. The Guinness tastes different here. And you know, it's okay for them to come in and do that because I'm sure it does taste different from their bar that never cleans their tap lines somewhere. And they're here, they're having a great time. So, you know, it's all good. It's all part of the same thing. Even if they go home and never have it again, they've had that experience.
Yeah, so it is.
Yeah.
Guinness definitely tastes different here than what it does in South Africa because it's not brewed in Ireland for South Africa. It's brewed in Nigeria. So, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
there you go.
Anyway, back to Belgian beers.
And the glassware. Let's stick with the glassware for a minute because some people do get very, very particular about it. And again, just going back to some of the Philly bars, there are some that do have the correct glassware for all of the different major Belgian breweries, although obviously they're not going to have like a special Stella glass. Like, no, they don't have that, but they have all of the other, you know, the other fancy ones. They have like your Chimay glass or, you know, all these other ones. So again, like, you know, I'm totally down with it if someone wants to use the right one. Do we think like, I guess I'm not 100% certain how recent that tradition is of having the right, air quotes, glassware for the beer. But I think I'm totally here for it as a marketing exercise. But, you know, and I can see the arguments people make of like, oh no, if it's, you know, the wider mouth, you can smell, you know, you get more of the aroma, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So they're like, get it, fine, all valid points. But beyond that, how important do we think it is? Like, I'm a little bit like, yeah. But again, if it's part of that overall sensory experience, sure, why not? But
yeah,
I've seen people get fussy about it, and that's like,
I'm not fussy about it, but I think it can be a really important part of like the sensory experience. Like there's I'll talk about this more in a little bit, but there's a really tiny pub in Bruges, De Gare, that has like their own beer, and they have like this massive beer menu and you can get whatever, but they have these really nice printed glasses with De Gare on it, and you can get like little cheese and things and stuff with it. And there's just something about having that beer in that pub with that glass that just kind of makes the experience. And I know that that kind of sounds maybe a little pretentious, but like there's just really something to having that whole thing tied together, seeing, because you really can't get it, you know, anywhere. So having that and being able to see, and it's just, you know, that little bucket list tick that just kind of makes you, you know, my inner beer nerd just so happy. I remember dragging my mom down there with me. She's like, why are we walking down this alleyway? Like, where are we going? And I'm like, no, it's just right here. It's this pub. And she's like, what? And then she goes inside and it's this wonderful pub. I you know, it's just fantastic. But yeah, no. And there's, yeah. So it's just the wandering down the alley to, you know, finding this amazing beer bar. I'm not finding it. I guess everyone has found it if you know where to look, but yeah, it's not necessarily like out in the open where you would expect to find it. You know, you have to kind of look for it, I suppose.
Mm. I feel like, the taste of the beer comes far more down to the freshness, the cleanliness of the lines, the cleanliness of your glass, mm-hmm. you know, good brewing practice, as opposed to something like the glass shape. However, you know, I don't know if I'd be super particular about going, you know, almost brand by brand, because I think brands probably get a little bit fussy about their own, you know, this glass for this particular beer that they make. But I do think that there is something that I now associate with, okay, if I'm going to drink something like a Belgian blonde, I kind of like this little goblet-y style.
Sure, sure.
What is this chalice-y style glass? It just makes it seem like the right thing to do. Although I don't know if it actually adds anything. I like the vibes. You know, and there's certain glasses, like I just don't think I'm going to drink a lager out of a teku glass, kind of, you know, almost a wine glass thing. That just doesn't feel right to me. But I would drink a sour out of it. Or
that's interesting.
I don't know. So I like the fact that all of these, a lot of the Belgian breweries and brands have got their own very special glassware, but I just don't have space for all of those guys. Can we just, you know?
If you're a bar dedicated to it, yes, fair play to you.
Gosh.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, I wouldn't want to drink a Belgian beer out of like a German Moss, you know? Like,
That's interesting.
It does matter to some degree. Like, I, you know, something about having like the really thick glassware, I just don't think would suit my experience of having any of the Belgian beers.
Yeah, maybe. No, that's a fair point. Yeah, no, I can be convinced on that. Yeah, that's fair. There's something about what seems at least like the smaller, maybe smaller is not even the right word, but the sort of bowl of the glass that you can sort of hold and warm with your hands and all those things. Yeah.
Feel free to disagree with us in the comments.
Yes. And if you are like a hardcore, like, must have all my right glassware, Stan, like, that is cool too. We want to hear from you, as long as like you're not that guy who goes in and berates the bar staff, because I've seen people do that. And no, why would you do that? No. And I'm sure none of you listeners do that, but you all know there's that guy. Just, and it's a guy, but just don't be that guy.
No,
I think that's fair enough. But then I'm going to pick up then something on you said, Tanya, like, again, you sort of mentioned kind of the different flavors maybe of a different glass. So maybe if we circle back to some of these different flavor profiles we get. And I know, Christina, you love like the hardcore sour ones. And I'm going to go on the record and say, like, I'm a giant Philistine because I do not like lambics. I don't like creeks. I don't even like an oud bruin, even though it's brown. Like, I'm just so basic. I love my doubles. I love my saisons. You know, all of those things. And you know, kind of your Belgian pale ales. You know, triples, quads as well. But I don't like the soury ones. They're not my thing. But I know, Christina, you love them. So I would love to hear more about your experiences having them in Belgium and just why you love them.
Yeah, so sour has always been like my favorite flavor profile since I was a kid. Like, there's a candy in the US called Warheads, and it like would burn your taste buds off. And I was always the kid that tried to shove the whole bag in my mouth at the same time. So like, the more sour, the better, the less taste buds I have at the end. Perfect. So that has evolved as I've become an adult,
right.
Although I still eat Sour Patch Kids and Warheads and hands on them. To my beer preferences. Don't get me wrong, I love the duples, the triples, and and I have yet to meet a Belgian beer I don't like. But I gravitate towards the sours. I love, you know, Flemish reds. I love Ogruins. I like Gears, and I like Lambics. I like all them all. Because they're sour, but I also really enjoy that they're really complex. So there's you know, kettle sours and things, which I also like. But I really, really appreciate the complexity of the sours from Belgium. I like that there's all these different notes in it. I like that there's layers of things. I like that I'm getting this on the nose. I like that horse blanket thing that, you know, a lot of people really don't like, or that farmhouse. Yeah. I'm here for it. I love it. I like all of that. And then I like the, you know, when they're aged on fruits. I like the creeks. I love cherries, so that's a big thing for me. But I love just all of the layers and the history. I like how it's, you know, spontaneously fermented in a lot of places, and you know, they have these just massive open cool ships.
We did some cool ship thing a few episodes back. Cool ships.
So I'm just really, really interested in the whole thing. So my knowledge of Belgian beer history goes back to about medieval, and it's not so great. So I don't know, whoever knows all the archaeological evidence for like the very first brewers in Belgium, that's beyond me. But I'm really interested in like sort of medieval brewing aspects and that kind of stuff, which is why I'm absolutely obsessed with Bruges.
And it's beautiful and all the things, yes.
Which is sort of like my happy place, because it has all this like wonderful medieval history. And then, and this is, you know, controversial opinion, I will stand by this, my favorite beer country, which is Belgium. Favorite country for beer, sorry, Ireland. But honestly, if I had to pick a country, it would be Belgium. Because they have that, just, it's just, it's mine. It might not be yours,
no shame.
It's mine.
No shame. No, yeah, I mean, we honeymooned in Belgium for that reason, just because everything delightful and delicious was there. And you, again, you didn't have as many varieties back then, because this was a long time ago. But we had a great time, because we had the frites and waffles and chocolate and beer. And, like, that's all you need. So,
like, we're just... Like, that's what... Wait, my husband and I went, and we got...
and chips with mayo.
Yes, we would go to these amazing pubs that would have, we went to one that had like a tasting tray, 12 Belgian beers, you know, and they're all half pints.
Oh gosh.
And it's all like, you know, 8-9%.
Phew. Wow. You probably had evening. Yeah.
That was during the day. I mean, we went and we... This is not indicative of my daily life, people, but when I was in Belgium, I was in Belgium.
You're on holidays, yes.
So, you know, we woke up, we went to the pub, and we drank those, and then we went and we got our frites with our mayo, and then we went to De Haliman, and, you know, and then we just kind of kept going to different places in there and ended up in a medieval basement cellar until all hours. But yeah, it was... I don't know. Bruges is a magical, it's like Disneyland for beer people, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we went to Ghent and Bruges for our honeymoon. Again, this is a long time ago now, but it was great, because it's exactly that. You could just stumble down alleyways and find things. And again, especially, and this is like obviously a pre-social media age, and even then it was like hard to find things. You had to like look them up in advance and, you know, and have maps, physical maps, all of the things, but, or at least like print out your MapQuest map and walk around. But just like that, exactly. And De Haliman, I love that tour, and just like, you know, the historic fabric of the building and just all the things. And again, I'm sure like anyone in Belgium is listening is like, oh my God, this is so basic. This is what tourists do. And that's okay. That's okay.
We're tourists. So,
exactly. Yeah. And I know there's amazing like craft beer happening there too, where there's all kinds of other stuff. And that is also fantastic. That wasn't happening back then, but again, old, so long time ago.
Yeah.
And these things evolve, so I think that is so cool. And we definitely, like, that would be an interesting kind of like, not even like part two, but like part four or five of like us talking about Belgian things would be, and this stuff's all happening. But I think, you know, it does come from this tradition, even if you're trying to do very different, you know, air quoting again, modern things, like you still have this amazing understanding, I think, that people have that you don't necessarily have in a lot of other places. So they understand that you're deviating from like a historical template, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Like I've done Brussels, Bruges, and Antwerp. And I really like Bruges because I'm a historian and there's like so much history there. Now there's history in Antwerp and there's history in, in Brussels, but it's a bit different. But it's for me, it was the same thing when I went to Antwerp, the cathedral in the city center, and like all around it, there are some really nice craft beer pubs, really tiny, just kind of fall in. They have massive beer lists. My mom was doing, I had done a tour of the cathedral in the morning. My mom was doing a tour in the afternoon, and I just parked myself in this tiny pub right next to the cathedral. I was the only person in there besides like the staff, and we were just, you know, chatting shit about Belgian beer. And that's the kind of stuff that I really like to do. And then Brussels was great. And we had some, I think it was Brussels Beer Project. I think that was, I might've. So that was like, they were making IPAs and they were making, you know, lots of like modern beer styles. And that's great. That's wonderful. You know, make what you really love. And we had gone to do some different things, but my favorite Belgian beer styles are more of the traditional styles.
I've never been to Belgium, sadly. I will go eventually.
We clearly need to do like an organized, you know, expedition.
Well, obviously you're not going to have to twist my arm too much.
No, well, exactly. And it's one of those, always wanted to, but I don't even know where to start. And as you say, Christina, I think it would be like Disneyland for beer people because it would just be amazing. But to be honest, I would go there and probably not want to taste any of the more modern craft styles unless they were really, really interesting, because I want to go and get all the traditional stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel similarly about Germany. You know, I'd want to go to Germany for like really exceptional lagers, and especially the very distinct regional variants of all the alt beers and all the different things that go on in different parts of the country.
For sure.
Yes. So I wouldn't go to Germany, let's say, and try and look for the latest craze in cold IPAs. I'd be looking for a good lager.
Exactly. Or like me in London, you know, last week for work, I made my quick stop in at the Kernel because I love them. They're making amazing beer and they had something with a shiny new hop. So obviously I stopped in to have the one beer with the shiny new hop. And then I went and had many pints of cask mild because that is what I do when it's accessible to me, is drink all the cask mild. And people can be like, that's weird, and for old people, and I can be like, I'm a weird old person and I'm fine with owning that. But yeah, when you go somewhere that's not your usual turf, you want to have whatever's the, you know, traditional thing. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy the other cool new stuff, but you know, you want to get the thing you can't get normally. And we can all get some variation of kind of, again, air quotes, craft beer somewhere. So
But I will say before we move on, if you're in Bruges, firstly, if you want any recommendations, hit me up. I'm happy to send you all of the things. But in the sort of square where the tower is, there's a museum. And on the second floor of the museum is a pub. And you can get a beer at that pub and sit out on the balcony and watch the entire square. Ooh, and it's usually never crowded. That's like my secret favorite. I'm not sure. It's not secret. Other people do it all the time, but it was something that I stumbled into.
Yeah.
And just became obsessed with being able to have a beer, like sort of up and being able to watch the whole thing. Obviously people much smarter than me had figured that out, beforehand, but we came across it by accident. But I do highly recommend, if you're in Bruges, to go to the museum and get a beer up there and sit on the porch thing and
and that's a good shout. In general, is a lot of the museums in Belgium in general, other places as well, but Belgium in general, like there'll be like a little open air part or something like that, but there's often like a historic pub where they have a beer that's brewed just for them, or you know, that is from just down the road. And so, you know, definitely like, don't sleep on your museum beers. Like there are some really good ones in Belgian museums, so keep an eye out, because you know, even if it's just kind of what's like might be a tea room somewhere else. No, there's some good stuff here. So yeah, don't sleep on them.
That's very cool. So if we had to describe to somebody that's never had a Belgian beer in their lives, what a Belgian beer tastes like, and I know you can't generalize, but you know, what is it that gives you that sense of Belgianness?
It's such a good question. I think I always come back to just, you know, things that come from the yeast, because there's always that Belgian yeast character, even though, again, we know we're broadly overgeneralizing, but it's, you know, I think in so many other places, when you see someone make, oh, this is our Belgian pale ale, it's because they sought out a specific yeast and they, you know, they did this and they did that. So I think you do get, again, kind of that effervescence often, you know, more carbonation than you might get in something usually. You get often a little bit of that sweetness, but also that dryness, that pepperiness. And again, broadly overgeneralizing, but, you know, I think about, you know, why I love a good Saison is because you've got that sort of almost like that snap to it. And it's that sort of lovely character to it. But it's, you know, as soon as you smell it, you kind of know it's there, if that makes sense. It's like, you know, it's art. You know it when you see it or smell it or taste it, in this case. So
I think that focus on fermentation, because that goes across the board to the sours as well, because it's, you know, that bacteria that comes in. So it's really that fermentation profile which creates a lot of these flavors in both them. And again, I'm overgeneralizing because I know someone's going, I know, generalizing.
Yeah. Yes.
Obviously there are, you know, differences and nuances. Absolutely. And stuff like this. But I think within, like what Lisa said, within the fermentation profile is where you see a lot of these strong flavors sort of come out. And with that also, I would say complexity.
Yeah.
So I would say Belgian beers, when I think Belgian beers, I think layers.
Oh, I like that. Layers. That's a good word. Layers.
Definitely. Yeah. So having tried to quite like sort of define it, I think yeast sort of sums it all up as well, you know, as you both said, because, you know, if we talk about the sort of more soury ones, your lambics and your gerses, I don't know how to say the plural now, damn it. Anyway, if we think about those ones, you know, they're obviously spontaneously fermented, whereas saisons would have maybe been spontaneously fermented but then harvested, you know, right. A lot like kvike yeast, you know, there might have been one of those nifty yeast stick things, you know, you never know how these things might have been brewed. So a lot of it comes down to this weird like house yeast that kind of goes around. I think the other thing, and it speaks to the complexity, Christina, is the blending. You don't see a lot of blending outside of Belgian beers.
That's right,
If I just sort of think about it, not much.
Not so much, no. The odd barrel-aged thing where we do this one and then that one and stick them together. But and I think, you know, there are certain, obviously some edge cases where people are very into that, but it is a very Belgian kind of a thing.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people will even take something like a Duvel and they'll try and harvest like the yeast in here, you know, to go and make something, because there is something that homebrewers often talk about. It's the sort of intangibles. You know, you can buy a packet of Belgian yeast in air quotes, but it doesn't quite come out the same. There's something about it. It's like a sourdough starter. You know, you make one fresh, it's okay. But once you've sort of used it and used it and used it, it adds all these layers and I don't know, these years of things to it, which gives your beer just something different. So I think blending and yeast are the biggest things in these beers. So if you're a home brewer looking to get into Belgian beers, first try a whole bunch of them and then save the yeast. Learn how to harvest.
Yeah, exactly. That's why so many of the things are bottle conditioned for your sort of for your pleasure. So there you go. Bottle condition for your pleasure. So we're coining phrases here tonight, folks, and I'm not even the one drinking, so just saying, I'm just this weird, it's normal.
They often do, though. A lot of these beers often also ferment quite warm, and that gives it also, based on the yeast, based on the malts, apparently there's a almost a different malting process and procedure with Belgian beers. I'm not really sure about that, so don't quote me, but they're fermented quite warm, and then often a lot of them are lagered. So it gives you all of the interesting yeasty flavors in the profile, but not always very cloudy or not always very suspended. It just means that they're aged and conditioned for a long time too. I think they borrowed that from the Germans anyway, but divine. They're just very, very sophisticated beers.
Here, very sophisticated beers, and you know, surrounded by, you know, sort of wine drinkers on kind of the other side over in France. And so I'm sure there's, you know, certainly cross currents there that maybe people like to ignore, but must be there. So, you know, as we were talking about before. So I think, yeah, there's that sort of sophistication. And I think, again, the other thing is, I think there's a good, you know, when you go to Belgium, and again, obviously, Tandy, you need to go to Belgium, but I think you people have such a good, I would say, understanding of it. I think there's just education about kind of how this is made, and not in depth necessarily, but I think people have a broad understanding of, oh, this happened to get this, this happened to get this. So they kind of know what to order. Whereas I feel like that's, again, unless you're a big beer nerd, those things are all kind of a mystery, and everyone's just like, beer is made from hops. And you're like, okay. Clearly, you know, there's things have gotten lost in translation here. So obviously that's not everyone, we're overgeneralizing, but I think there is just a sort of broad understanding of what these different categories are, a little bit about kind of how they got here historically. And if you like X, you might like Y. So I think it's just easier for people to recommend things or, again, food pairing. We didn't get into that really at all. I think that's a whole discussion, but Belgian beer, so good for that. Like, we're not even talking like just like your mussels and frites and cheeses, but just like all of the things. So,
yeah.
So I think what we're coming up with is that we clearly need to do, again, this was our introductory episode. We want to get in and, you know, we're going to do that Saison episode at some point, but I think there's so many other bits and pieces of Belgian beer we could focus on. Like, maybe people do want a whole deep dive of a certain Trappist brewery, or, you know, something like that. Let us know. We would love to know what you want to hear about. Or again, if there's someone from, like, you know, current Belgian brewery doing something super cool, we would love to know about that too and talk about it a little bit more. But these will all have to wait because we only have, you know, so much time of an episode, and Tandy needs to get to Belgium. So just saying.
You know, in the meantime, I'm doing my damn best drinking everything that I can find. So
yeah. So I think before we wrap up and before we kind of go to any final thoughts, I thought maybe we'd each just kind of go around and say, like, kind of a couple of our favorite Belgian beers, like a specific one, or it could even be a Belgian style beer. So maybe not necessarily made in Belgium, but inspired by. So I don't know. Do you want to start, Christina? Do you have one kind of on the front of mind? I know you've got one there. Yeah, please. Yeah, go for it.
I have a couple. So I like and recommend Creeks. Boone Creek is very good. I know it is famous in beer circles, but it's famous for a reason. So West Letteren 12. If you can get your hands on it, I would recommend trying that. And yeah, if you can go to Bruges and make it to Degare, I would drink the Degare house beer.
Very good. Very good. How about you, Tandy? And of course, like I was saying, doesn't have to be Belgian specifically, just inspired by.
Inspired by. Well, I think the first one is Saison DuPont. It's the sort of, it's the BJCP example of what a Saison should be, even though, as we said, really Saison can be a lot of things, but it's a great beer. And one that whenever I try and brew a Saison, I'm sort of trying to edge closer to something like that, but we'll get there. And the other, not a Belgian brewery, but a Trappist brewery, is Le Trappe Blonde. I just love the Blonde specifically. Actually, I like the whole range. I really do. But the Blonde has got a special place in my heart. I love all of them. Actually, I just like Le Trappe, but they're in the Netherlands, but it's Trappist, and it's that feel. They're divine. Absolutely divine.
Very good. Yes, I've got a Le Trappe also just in my, I should just start calling it cellar and not corner of my kitchen, because that sounds fancy.
That sounds fancy.
So, but I mean, for me, just a couple, like, in addition to like the Troubadours, and just, I love everything they make. Like Magma's the other one I really like from them, again, kind of the strong ones, but I just love so many, like, doubles, again, just like the Westmalle double, which is just the classic example of the style. So good. Shout out to one American one, to Victory Golden Monkey, which is a triple, and it is a gorgeous beer. It's also a beer that I have had too many of in a parking lot waiting to go watch soccer, which sounds terrible, but actually is a delightful thing. But it is, you know, again, it's a triple. You want to mind how you go with it, but it is a really, really delicious beer, and I think great example of the style. And again, just shout out to the Philly area for anyone in the States listening. So much good Belgian beer there, and you're getting it fresh, like it's coming straight in, good cold chains, all the things, a lot of things brewed especially for the market there. So just shout out to anyone who's into that, who wants to go make a special trip. You can also go to Teresa's Next Door in Wayne, Pennsylvania. Wonderful, wonderful beer bar. Or again, to Monk's, kind of the classic in the city. But But then to go back to sort of Belgium proper again, you know, I'm gonna go back to Saison du Pont because it's one of my favorites too. I just think it's and it's one of those things you forget how good it is until you have it one again, and then you're like, oh, why am I not doing this all the time? It's just so perfect. Just such a good beer. So
yes,
pure class.
Back on that, definitely try Bock if you can get your hands on one of them. And just because if we're talking about like local, we can't do the episode as Irish living people without mentioning Meskin, who is our Meskin Brewery, who makes Belgian beers here in Ireland, and they do an excellent job.
And they're gorgeous. Yes,
they do
beautiful beers, amazing brewery, big fan. So if you want something Irish but Belgium, I would recommend checking out Meskin.
Yes,
and then really basically any Belgian beer you can get your hands on.
And it doesn't have to be a Stella. Although again, we've talked about Stella before because it started as a Christmas beer. It was a thing once, and then it you know, it's gone on a journey. So we'll leave it at that for Stella. But I think we want people to know so many amazing Belgian beers and that have influences all over the place. And so I think, you know, again, we want to hear from you listeners. Are there any others that you really love, you want to see a shout out? Or again, if you are that person who is obsessed with glassware, like, come at us. We are here for it. You know, we want to know all about it. But I think unless anyone has any final thoughts. Oh, Christina has a final thought.
I do. So we've talked about travel a little bit, and I'm going to be in Pennsylvania in a couple of weeks So if anyone anyone of our listeners are from Pennsylvania, live in Pennsylvania, have been to Pennsylvania, and you have any recommendations for breweries, sort of central Pennsylvania, Lancaster, State College area, or anything to do, let me know, because I'm really curious what you think. Thanks.
Yes. Oh, no. Great chat. Tandy, any final thoughts from you?
No. Enjoy Pennsylvania. Enjoy all the Belgian beers. To everybody, tell us your faves.
There we go. Yes, tell us your faves. And for those who are going to maybe get inspiration for Christina's trip, go back and listen to our interview with Lou Bryson, where we talked about whiskey for beer nerds. He's already given her some tips, but all the tips are more than welcome. So again, I would say, you can find us at Beer Ladies Pod on all of the places. Hit up the link tree, all the things. We love it when you guys leave reviews or tell a friend, share, subscribe, all the things. It really does help. But with that said, we will say until next time, bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.